are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
You know, before we get started, I have a buddy of mine that lives in Florida, and he's over the years, he's told me, because he's a fan of yours, and he said, and he lives in Florida, like I said, and he said, hey, do you ever see Frank over at Gold's Gym? Because I'm a member at Gold's Gym. Are you still a member?
I am a member. I don't go there anymore because it's just so filthy. I can't. You know, I was there during the glory days, and it's just so.
It's sad.
Yeah, it's very toxic. I mean, I remember there when all the big shots used to come there. It's not quite the same. And as you know, they don't have this new group has no gym decorum.
Nope.
No. Put the weights back. They sit there and move equipment to other rooms. So it's a nightmare.
Yeah, for yeah, I know what you mean. And I'm sure you know who I'm going to talk to you about, Tom Platz.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, Tom and I trained back in the early 90s. Yeah. I brought Tom on. I've written him some training courses. And for one of the training courses called Big Beyond Belief, I trained with Tom at Gold's Gym. And you're right. The atmosphere, you know, there is much different because I'm still a member. When I go down to LA, I don't train there with weights. I just go do some cardio. But I can just tell by doing cardio that it's a whole different ballgame.
Well, first of all, it wouldn't have been tolerated in the old days.
Right.
Because those guys were all professional world championship bodybuilders, and they wouldn't stand it for people doing that behavior.
Exactly.
And they were probably been thrown out of the gym. For that.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of a sad deal. And, I'm, you know, there's a possible chance that you and I were in the same gym at the same time.
I'm sure.
You know, it's crazy.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, he said, ask him, you know, anyway. So I told him I would if I'd see you on the
podcast. Well, that's very nice of him. Thank you.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Hey, listen, yeah. I know you're an actor, you're a singer, songwriter, guitar player, and a bunch of things. But before we get into that, and I do want to get into that, I want to get some background, if you don't mind, on your parents. Where are your parents from? And tell us a little bit about them.
Well, my father was born in Italy, came over here when he was 13. My mother was born in Washington, D.C. And my mother had a weightlifting show in 1956 on local TV in Washington called Barbellas, she'd be on there lifting weights. And we had all this York equipment in our basement. And then you're talking 1955, 56.
Wow.
So the benches were kind of wood.
Yeah.
Red with red vinyl or whatever they used back then. And the dumbbells, a lot of them didn't have sleeves. They were just like the balls on the end, stuff like that. So, and we used to get all this York protein powder, which was like, it was like drinking cardboard, but you know, that's what they had then.
Yeah, only the serious.
Yeah, I remember my brother and I trained in New York City at Dan Laurie's, believe it or not, 1971. The only thing they had for like protein stuff was a stuff called ProGest.
ProGest.
And it was like orange. It was like cough syrup. It was like Robitussin, but it was called ProGest. And, you know, I mean, and that was the beginning of the Nautilus machines.
Yeah.
Which, to me, the early ones I thought were great myself.
Yeah. Yeah, I trained on those myself too. So your mom was in the so she put on events or she performed?
No, she lifted weights, and so in other words, this was in the early days. It's like the Jack LaLanne era, even before, where they would have, you know, there were three channels, as you know, and so she would go on and they go, okay, now Jackie, what do we do for this? You know, she'd be on there with like, you know, 10, 12 pound dumbbells and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, people didn't work out in those days, you know, Leo.
Right.
It was like,
right.
It was very few people. There was like, I remember when I was in New York City, there were like three gyms in the city. There was the Y, Dan Laurie's, and then there was Mid City. But other than that, I mean, the average guy had probably a 12-inch arm. I mean, so it wasn't like, so my brother and I would walk down the streets. We were a little freaky for that time.
So your mom did the weightlifting, and your dad, he was a barber, yeah?
Hairdresser.
A hairdresser. Okay.
Yeah, everyone in my family were either barbers and hairdressers.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's interesting. So they got together and they became.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have four siblings and you're the second oldest?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And who are your, what do your siblings do? Are they in the area?
No, they're not in the business. My half brother Tom lives out in the desert. And he was in the military for most of his life, and then was a law office manager. And my other sister's a housewife. My other sister passed. And I also have a younger brother, believe it or not, that's 23.
Is that right? Yeah. And then I did notice, again, I find this a little bit interesting. I'm Portuguese, and in my culture, I'm a junior like you are.
Yeah.
And usually the older son in my culture is the junior. And I noticed yeah, tell me about that.
Well, usually the first son gets the grandfather's name.
Oh, okay.
And the second son becomes the junior.
Got it.
I think that's how it is. I mean, I'm sure it's backwards, you know.
Yeah, I was just curious about that because of what happened to me with my being a junior.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you this. What was your first entry into the industry that you eventually got in? Were you a singer songwriter or acting? How did that work out?
No, it was always music for me. I mean, I was, from a little kid, if you saw the documentary, I started opening my mouth at 6 years old. So I was a singer first, and that's what I did. You know, I did my music and all that other stuff like that. And then it just progressed as time went by, but yeah. That's what I wanted to do. That was my calling.
So okay.
That's kind of what I did.
Now, did you have a band or anything like that? Or were you solo?
I did in high school. Yeah. I mean, I've gone through different periods in my career where I was a solo artist and then I was a, in a band.
Yeah.
It depends. You know, if the band broke up, you know, all of a sudden you become a solo artist.
Exactly. Yeah. Adapt or die, right?
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So it was that type of thing. And, you know, it was such a different business that it is today. Like, it's almost like we're talking about Gold's Gym. There was just a different thing because, first of all, bodybuilding, as you know, was a small industry.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, they had these little Iron Man magazines and stuff like that. And it was like, you know, Chuck Sipes, Harold Poole, you know. Right. And it was a very small, I think the first Mr. Olympia, there was like maybe 500 people.
Yeah. It's a cult status. Cult type of industry, you know. Study,
yeah.
Yeah, no,
I get Arnold, yeah, and Arnold changed all that, I think.
Yeah, yeah, Arnold. I've had Ed Connors on before, you know. Of course, he was the guy that developed Gold's Gym in part, but he was talking about that, like you're talking about that too. Okay, so what got you into acting then?
Well, I just I got into acting. I figured, well, why not try it? So I did a few acting courses in here. I mean, I don't know if I was really into it deep or not, but, and after I had, you know, the success with, Staying Alive, you know, acting parts kind of came my way. But in the meantime, when I was out here, I did do, I went to acting classes, cold reading classes. I figured, you know, if I'm out here, I might as well, who knows what'll happen. But it was always the music. And so the music got me into the acting again, but I somewhat learned acting on the spot. I mean, I was always a little bit of a ham anyway, so I wasn't that much of a stretch. So that's what I did. And then from there, I started going from one movie to the next movie, and, you know, and it just kind of ended up like 77 movies. But the one thing I regret is that I kind of put my music on hold a little bit because you have to understand, in my era, musicians didn't make that kind of money, any money, unless you were like Rod Stewart or a huge star. But I mean, from where I came from, I mean, my first, I guess, would say serious payday would be like Staying Alive.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, before that, you know, we were playing bars, playing clubs, you know.
Yeah.
And, so I got more. So I figured, wait, I'm doing a movie for 3 weeks. I'm making more money in this movie than I do if I went out on tour with my band, because, you know, you have a band, you got 10 people on the road. So
more overhead.
There's a lot of overhead.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've always stated, I never got into this business for the money. I never got into it for the money. I got into it because it was easy for me to do, and I actually loved it.
Yeah.
And I liked performing. I liked doing all that stuff. So for me, that was okay. That was okay. So that's what got me into it.
All right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're gonna get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you big beyond belief in the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
You know, there's something to be said for getting into something for the passion of it, you know, because I can relate to that. When I was growing up, my family had, Portuguese were big into having dairies, dairy farms.
Yeah.
And, you know, my grandfather, my dad, it was supposed to go to me, but I was the black sheep of the family.
Yeah, right.
I went south. But, yeah. But you know something? I haven't been more fortunate than I am now because I love what I'm doing. I mean, bodybuilding changed my life forever in many ways, you know? And,
yeah.
And the thing about that is I think if you, in my opinion, if you go about it that way, I think the money follows, you know, because you're doing because you're doing something you love, you're authentic and people feel that, right?
Yeah. And I think there's something nice about when you're in your 60s and your body is like better than a 30-year-old. That's kind of cool. I mean,
yes,
that's like, you know, and to me, that's payback. Cause I mean, I, you know, look at today and I'm not doing that. But yeah. If you look at today and you look at the dress and the vibe, everyone's wearing a baseball hat with these long shorts and these big t-shirts because they're fat.
Yeah.
And they're out of shape.
Yeah.
Okay. In our day, the clothes were a little tighter. When I was in high school, there was maybe 3 fat people in the whole school.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if you say fat, all of a sudden now you're, you know, cancel culture.
Oh, yeah. Call something
fat. But no, when I got drafted in 1969, when I went down for induction, they go, okay, you over here, you fatso, get over there. And that's how it was. That was the culture. I mean, yeah. I can't rewrite culture.
Right.
But it was different. But if you notice, when we were younger, there weren't that many heavy people. Because
yeah.
Most people, like you're talking about dairy farmers, most people did manual labor.
Damn right.
So they were country strong. You know right. What I mean? So they ate, but they were out there working 9, especially in the dairy business. I mean, you're up at 3:30 in the morning, 2 milkings a day.
Yeah.
That's a rough job, man.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And the small dairies like what we had, not only did you do the milking, but you had to go out there and feed the damn cows and buck the hay and do everything else.
Yeah. And get cow kicked.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's very dangerous. There's a lot of milkers that have been killed. People don't realize the cow can really kick hard.
Oh, yeah.
They'll kill you if they want to.
Absolutely. No, I've seen it happen, actually. Some people getting killed on a dairy, you know. I want to go back a little bit to your guitar playing for the John Travolta movie. How does that work when you're writing songs for a movie? Are you on set or how exactly?
No. What I did was I had the script, which is unlike what they do today. I had the script and you know, and if you're a songwriter, everyone has their own method. You know, some people just write the lyrics. Some people just write a tune. I'd write the music and lyrics most of the time.
Yeah.
So you just kind of get into a role. I usually write well with a keyboard player, just because you can just do more on the keyboard than you can do on the guitar. And so that's how I did. Everyone has a different, I'm not the type of person all of a sudden looks like it in a situation and goes, ah, let me write that down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some people do. I think it's our subconscious is never asleep. And I think our subconscious, you know, we might have stuff stored in there for 50 years.
Yeah.
All of a sudden we're not even aware of it.
Yeah.
I mean, they asked Bob Dylan, what do you, he goes, I have no idea.
Yeah.
They go, how do you write this? He goes, I don't know. I just do.
I think
it probably could be subconscious.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting, you know.
It's not easy to do. It's not easy to sit there with a blank piece of paper and create something from nothing. And then if the song becomes a hit accepted by millions of people, that's That's pretty cool when we think about it.
Damn right it is. So when you're doing a like for that movie, are you being asked to write a certain kind, you know, for a certain theme, obviously, to?
No, I didn't. I just wrote. Right? Yeah, I just had a vibe, and because it's really interesting, I write for myself. Mm-hmm. I don't really write for like, oh, well, this would sound good if she does it.
Right.
I figured, well, it sounds good if I'm doing it. If someone else wants to get it, they can have it. Yeah. So, but I would say definitely I write for myself more or less.
Yeah, I had there was an actor that I saw that was doing some, I can't think of his name right now, but he was doing a documentary, and the person asked him, do you worry about when you're writing or acting that people won't like your work? And he said, I don't do it for them. I do it for me because I can't control how they're going to, you know, respond to the movie that I do or the song that I'm doing. That's kind of what you're saying, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely true because you can't predict. I mean, I don't know if you can sit there and wake up one morning and go, hey, I'm going to write a hit record.
Yeah.
I think you write what appeals to you that maybe will appeal to other people. If it doesn't, I think I've written some of my better songs, and I've had a lot of people don't like them.
Yeah.
And I thought it was pretty good myself.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting.
But it's – and then all of a sudden the song that you think, eh, that's – you've heard it many times. The guy goes, well, this is the hit, and all of a sudden the B-side becomes the hit. Some DJ plays the B-side and it becomes a monster hit.
And that happens
a lot. I mean, I would say though, at the end of the day, I was kind of a scrawny guy. So I wasn't like big. I'm still not that big, but I'm just saying I was kind of a scrawny guy. My brother was in more of the bodybuilding then, you know, which was kind of weird to walk around.
Yeah.
Everyone thought they were big, their arms are 14. But, you know, when you're 16 years old, and see, he was into Steve Reeves and Superman and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So that was his motivation. And in those days, there were no trainers. People would just train with their friends. So he had these weights. And he started when he was like 13, 12. He started lifting weights. He was into it back then. No one was into it. Very, very few people.
Yeah.
So he had like a few of his friends that would come home from junior high school and they would go in our basement, you know, the typical bed paneled basement in those days.
Yeah. Yeah.
From like a floor. And they would lift weights. But there wasn't that much, you know, it's amazing when you look at guys like Steve Reeves or Grimmick, there wasn't that much equipment.
Right.
I mean, they didn't have stuff like that. They had a bench, curl, and press. They didn't have squat machines.
Right.
You know, and you remember in the old days, you want donkey races. Some guy sat on your butt.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. And so.
Probably a girl, but a guy.
Would probably a girl. Yeah. But the thing is, guys don't, and I thought they had great bodies. I did. I mean, today they're too big, too blocky, too square.
Yeah.
I think that like Frank Zane, a beautiful build,
classic physique.
Yeah. I was posting some, let me turn this stupid thing off. I was posting some stuff today that was really interesting. I found all these great photos of wrestlers and bodybuilders from like the 1880s, 1890s, like Sandow.
Yeah.
Their bodies are great, man. Yeah. I mean, they've got chiseled, like their abs, and there's no roids. There's nothing then.
Right.
And you had Bernard McFadden, who was the father of nutrition, like Paul Bragg. So I guess they knew what they were eating.
Yep.
But Sandow was really strong.
Yeah.
But his body, the bodies, you know what the funny thing is? They weren't as wide, but they were very rounded, and like big, you know, big biceps. And like, I thought that was a great body.
No, I agree with you. You know, and again, I kind of was in the industry when I started competing that kind of look was kind of in getting more blocky and not as classical, you know, but I do know what you're talking about. Have you heard of a guy? I know you have, called Vince Giorana, the Iron Guru.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Did you ever meet him?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
He was an interesting character. I mean, he was an old guy wearing shirts cut open down here. He's kind of, bad hair, kind of like juxtaposed to make it look like he has more. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, I was Bob Green. Maybe you've heard of him. He was he used to write for a lot of the muscle mags, Bob Green. Right. And Bob used to live above Vince's gym.
In the Valley?
Oh yes. In Studio City. Is that the Valley?
Right.
Okay.
Yes, Studio City,
I met Bob at Arnold Schwarzenegger Classic. We just started talking on the way back, and I said, "Hey, can I come work out? I'd like to go work out at Vince's because I've heard at this point I was in the industry for about maybe 6-8 years, yeah. And of course Vince, the Iron Guru, I read all about him and all that, and he goes, "Yeah, come on down." So I went down there on a weekend, Fred.
I heard it was a real dump. I never went inside.
Oh shit! I went down there before I came into the building. Bob said, "Wait outside." I'm thinking, what the hell? He goes, I said, why? He goes, I got to go ask Vince if it's okay for you to come in. I'm thinking, oh, my
God. Kind of like I heard he was kind of a nasty guy. He could be.
The meanest guy I ever met, Frank.
Is that interesting?
Yeah.
Interesting.
But I have to tell you, I ended up, Vince, you didn't take that?
No, it's okay.
Okay.
Of course, everything while I'm doing an interview, every idiot in the world.
Of course.
But I heard he was like that.
Oh, my God.
Very nasty.
Oh, meanest guy I ever met. Well, so I go into this gym. It's like you said, a low ceiling. The equipment was wooden, my friend. It was just like what you were talking about in his gym. And Vince was really the stickler about no music, no cardio.
Even no dropping weights?
No. Even to the point where there was a gal that was in there. I was in there, so I saw this. And she was sitting down putting her shoes on, and she had headphones on. And he walked up to her, pulled her headphones out, and he says, if you want to listen to that fucking music, you'd go down the street. That was Vince.
Joe Gold was no day in the park either.
That's true. I trained at his place too.
Did you ever train at Santa Monica Bodybuilding, George Pipchick's place?
No.
Uh-uh. Okay. My brother trained there a lot. Now, George was he came from Bratislava, Czechoslovakia. He came there with nothing.
Yeah.
But he was like a welder. And he was one, you know, he's like those Eastern Bloc guys. And, you know, they save every penny they make, you know. And
yeah.
He started buying little bits of property. So he buys this gym and he made all the equipment. I mean, I'm telling you, it was all orange painted like a powder coat.
Yeah.
But it was great equipment. I mean, it really was amazing. He made it all.
Yeah.
His gym was no music. The only one that could get music there was my brother because he was the most famous. But anyone else, no music. And you better not drop those weights.
Oh.
Or if you were grunting and making toyeko, yay, people at work, get out.
Yeah,
And he would literally throw people out of the gym. But yeah, guys like Tom Hanks would train there. A lot of actors, like Vince, in the old days, a lot of actors.
A lot of them.
Clint Walker, they all trained there, right?
A ton of them, yeah. So I was in there. So Vince had this little cage, kind of where he sat all the time. You know, he was like a hawk in that gym. And I didn't really know. And I was doing some heavy shoulder presses with dumbbells, and I took the wooden bench, and I moved the wooden bench over to the heavy weight. And when I was doing that, Vince got up and he said, "Put that son of a bitch back. If you're not strong enough to lift the weight, then don't lift it."
Wow. I mean,
that's Vince.
We could use him now because he probably, if he went into Golds now, he would probably literally, if we brought him back to life, he would probably have a coronary.
Oh, yeah. He'd probably be put to sleep. I
mean, people coming in with roller bags.
Oh.
Music.
Brutal.
Sitting there like, here's it now, on the bench, the girls mostly, texting.
In between
the sets, and the guys are sitting there, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, minutes rest, yeah. Come on. And all of a sudden, I guess you're a chauvinist pig. I said, no, we're here to work out, not
right, text. Right.
I've told girls, I used to get in trouble all the time, I said, if you trained as hard as you text, you'd be Miss Olympia.
Oh, that's good.
That went over really well.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing was, I wanted to work out.
Yeah.
You know, right? People, you know, drive and travel. You know, there's a time and place. I said, you can't take an hour out of your day.
Right.
And not keep checking on your phone and stuff. Yeah. I didn't wear earphones in the gym.
Yeah,
because when I was in Golds, it was kind of a social hang. So you talk to people. Hey, Joe, what's going on? Blah, 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 blah. So I was not one of these guys like this. Only time I wear anything on my earphones is when I go to the boxing gym, and my friend owns, it's a great place, but they play like rap and hip hop music, which I don't like. So I will put on my headphones and I'm reading from my iPad. I'll be reading, I'm reading right now, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Winter Dreams. And I put on atmosphere of music, like thunderstorms, very loud.
Yeah.
And I tell them, I said, this is the greatest gym with the worst music I've ever heard. But other than that, you guys are okay.
Yeah. But I tell you what, I learned a lot from Vince. He taught me.
Of course.
Oh my goodness, he was all about.
He looked good, man. But he looked. I mean, he was an old guy. He was in shape, though.
He was in shape, you know. And he taught me about how to train the body from different angles, rather than being so so concerned about lifting so much weight. So that, you know what, he was.
Arnold tells me all the time. He goes, Frank, too much weight. I don't lift that heavy. He goes, that's why I got. He goes, lift it too much. You don't have to. Look at Sergio Nubre.
Yep.
Exactly. I saw him. I was at a function with him. He had like 21-inch arms. He used to use like 25, 30-pound dumbbells.
Right.
It's like really strict. Never trained heavy. Frank Zane didn't train that heavy.
Yeah.
He trained. I mean, no, he pushed it, but not like Franco and those guys were.
Yeah.
Or
no,
Gallic. Those guys were animals, man.
Yeah. Oh, Vince taught me that. And then I was so fortunate. Did you ever hear of an event called the Legends Dinner?
I think I was there. Was that in L.A.?
Yeah, that was in L.A.
Was Steve Reeves there?
Yes, Jack LaLanne.
I was there.
I was there with Vince. LaLanne was there.
I saw Vince. Vince had like his shirt, like custom. I was there. And Steve Reeves was there. Clint Walker was there. I was at that dinner.
Now, LaLanne was there, right, Jack?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack and LaLanne. And, Jack used to like to hit the sauce a little bit, line. But,
I think at that event, he was like 70 years old or 75.
I was at that event.
He was working that room like a youngster, man. That guy was, boy, he had energy, didn't he?
Yeah, he had like one of those like disco shirts from the old like shirt with the collar. And I talked to him. He's kind of, he was a little abrupt. I mean, he wasn't like the warm and fuzzy guy.
Yeah.
I guess if he liked you, maybe.
Yeah.
But I thought he looked pretty good for like the 70s.
Yeah, it's in his 70s, yeah. And I had a couple people come up to the table because Vince invited me. He was really – he was like hard on me and me.
Who was the other guy that was there? He was older. Oh, he was a great Jewish guy, not Sid. So, man, but kind of looked like a John Grimmick.
Yeah.
But he was – I remember – yeah, because he had a Star of David on. He goes, I'm like what they call – the Jewish Steve Reeves. Of course, he was joking around, which is funny. But Steve Reeves didn't look that great. Bill Pearl looked pretty good.
Bill Pearl was there. I was just going to say.
I was at that. I was with Roger Callard.
I've known you a long time, Frank. I just didn't know it.
Yeah.
You know?
I was there with Roger Callard.
Well, that's funny. No, somebody came up to me because they know how Vince is. And they came up to me and said, how did you get in here? I said, well, Vince invited me here. He goes, you got to be kidding me. He doesn't invite anybody to anything. I said, I guess he must like me, but I would have never known it, Frank.
I wonder if he lived. He must have lived kind of a lonely life in a way, I guess.
Yeah, I think he did.
Where did he live? In the gym?
Pretty much. I mean, I think, you know, he told me one time, he says, my biggest fear is that I'm going to end up under a bridge. You know, because he was, he had a, I tried to shoot a video with him back then, and it was impossible, Frank. It was impossible to deal with him. Absolutely impossible.
I wonder where he was from. He was Italian, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder where he's from, the East Coast. Who knows what his background could have
been. Oh, God.
Yeah. But he's one of the early guys, like the Chuck Sipes.
Yep.
Those guys. I mean, he's like, remember, so he started training probably in the late 40s, 50s.
Yeah.
Tommy Sansone, all those great guys.
Yeah. You know, Vince was a guy that was big on zero carbs and eating high fat, high protein.
Maybe that's why he didn't live that long. I don't know.
I don't know.
You would look at Jack LaLanne. Jack used to love to drink wine. And he looks like the 95. My mother used to smoke 3.5-4 packs of cigarettes a day, just died September, a month short of 99.
Unreal.
And by the way, was still driving. And her memory is way better than mine. Sharp, every morning, treadmill, trampoline they have, Pilates, practice her accordion. So I said, you know, she might outlive Sly and me, the way things are going. I mean, she could be like one of these people from Lima, Peru, you know, that live forever.
Yeah.
But she always, both my mother and father never were fat, ever.
Yeah.
And my father, we raised horses. We had a lot of horses. And my father always had the house where we lived, and he had a farm.
Yeah.
And he always was doing something. I would come down to visit him. Now, this is old school. You know this, if your parents are from the old country. I come down to visit my father from California. And my father wasn't like the most pleasant guy in the world. I mean, he was like, he was like Vince Gironda too. Okay. So it was like, my father wasn't like the most fun, had the personality of a manhole cover.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would get there and I go, hey, how you doing? Hey, listen, help me out. Get on that tractor. Start. I'm not there for 30 minutes. I'm out on the old beat up Ford tractor because he was real cheap. He didn't like spend money disking the property.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really hot in Maryland. It's the summer. It's like, and that was his thing. Like, you know, I think he gave me like a $4 belt for my birthday. That's what I was coming down for. It was just like, he was like, it's amazing. My brother and I aren't in like sanitariums.
Yeah. Point. Different times, man. I know what you mean. You know, as a young kid, and my dad was good compared to my grandfather with my dad.
Yeah.
You know, on the dairy and the farm and everything. But my dad taught me how to work at a young age, Frank. And you know what? That's one of the best things that he did was have me go out there and have chores to do. It wasn't slave labor, but I tell you what, I had to be held accountable and be out there on that dairy no matter what, as long as I was living under his roof. And I played sports, but I had to do that too. You know, and I'm glad that he did because he taught me how to work.
But you have nightmares of cow pies though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
God, now I can't tell you how many times we play sports and I'd slip on a newly cow pie.
Yeah.
It was like something that it just slid. And you end up, you go, oh man.
Oh yeah.
Like stupid cows sitting there. That's why cows are really stupid. That's why they made them black and white. So
well, you know, their brain is only about that big.
Yeah. I mean, they're made for a steak. I mean, they're not
exactly.
Made.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact,
but now where was your farm?
It was here in California where I live now.
Out in Norco?
No, Visalia. Visalia is in between Fresno and Bakersfield.
I know Visalia. I'm going to tell you a quick story. When I lived in New York, I was struggling. I was 20, and I was living with my brother, right? And I was playing my acoustic guitar on the street corner, and I found a job in a place called the Summer House on 60th and 3rd Avenue, right? So I can't. You know, when you're that young, you're brash. So I had my acoustic guitar, and they hired me. So I sat on a stool with a microphone and played my songs and stuff, and there was a girl that worked the waitress. Now, I'd never been around that many good-looking girls, you know. And this girl was a blonde, and she goes, "Oh yeah, I'm a model. I'm here from California. You know, I was in New York." And her name was Devin Collins, and she was from Visalia.
Really? Wait a minute. I know her. She went to Mount Whitney High School.
She would be about 60. Okay, if I'm 70, she would be like 65.
67. She's actually 66 or 67 now.
Yeah, exactly. She's a few years younger than me.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
In fact,
her brother was a councilman in Visalia.
Yeah, and they had horses.
Yes.
And she was beautiful.
Beautiful.
Like five times. Okay.
Yes.
Well, here, being the Italian guy, I just fell. I never laid a finger on her, but I fell head over heels in love with her.
Yeah.
And she used to sit there with those big blue eyes and watch me play.
Yeah.
I was like 20. She might have been 1920.
Yeah.
And man, I just turned into the biggest moron because I didn't know. I'm green. I didn't know anything. But I was so in love with her that, dig this, I got so depressed. You know, I said 20-year-old, so here comes my brother. You know why? Because you got no arms. That's why. That's why she don't like you. Look at you, you skinny rat bastard. So he started taking me to the Y gym because I wasn't really working out. And this gym was classic. It was the old Y in Manhattan. And I'm talking this gym from the 30s. So these were the dumbbells with the round balls on the end that were like,
And
the place was filled with white chalk. And there were guys squatting. I mean, old York and Ballard weights and stuff.
Yeah.
So I started training, man, because I said, well, she'll like me now.
Yeah.
And I start getting like yoked. And then we start going to Dan Laurie's. And man, and all of a sudden we were walking around. This shows you how goofy we were. Okay. So I'm 22, size 26, 25. We're walking around I remember it's either Fruit of the Loom or one of those places you used to make these things called beefy tees. What they were like t-shirts, but they're stretched.
Yeah.
And like maybe a little tighter on the arms than they should be.
I remember them. Yeah.
Yeah. So my brother and I would walk down the street from the gym with those old like canvas gym bags with a weight belt. And we couldn't afford, no one wore gloves then. But my brother had the wherewithal, those engineer gloves with the big cuffs.
Yeah.
They're like $3. That's what we used to wear. God, I think I probably have a pair. And that's what we used to wear. And a thing of Progest. Okay. A Tiger Bar or something. Yeah. Tiger Bar. We'd walk down the street. Now you got to admit, this is Manhattan, 1972, wearing sweatpants. Nobody wore sweatpants on the street with these beefy tees.
Oh yeah.
Hair like down to here.
Quite the look.
Yeah, two brothers, and yeah. You know, we look like, and I'm telling you, people would shit. We'd walk by, people would look at us like, until we saw Sergio Oliva walking down the street, and we went like,
shrug up.
His arms were bigger than my chest.
Yeah.
He walked down the street, he was literally this wide.
Yeah.
His forearms and arms are like 23. I've never seen anything that big in my life. He wasn't tall. Monster. He was also wearing a beefy tee t-shirt. So I think I'll take a break from the beefy tee for a day. Yeah. If he's in town.
Let me put my sweatshirt on.
Let me put pea coat on. Because he was massive.
Yeah.
I mean his arms, they're huge like this. Like 22 and a half inch arms.
Yeah.
So my brother and I, that was our thing. We'd walk around and you know. So it was so bad I worked out, I had to leave New York. I swear to God. But that's what young love and angst does. You know, you're stupid, you know. So, even though I never touched her, I never kissed her. I mean, it was just like, it was almost like I felt like I was Quasimodo in like the Hunchback of Notre Dame or one of those things like that. And so I moved to Florida and I was playing down there doing my coffee shop. And I swear to God, I came back to New York about a year and a half later, walking that street. I'm still in good shape. And who do I see?
Evan
Collins.
No way.
Oh, hi. And I was still like the little bit of the pitter patter, but you kind of outgrow it a little bit. So she came to see me 4 years ago.
Really?
Playing a gig. She'd been married. Well, she'd been married since 1977.
Yeah.
You got kids. So she's like, grand. And she still looked beautiful, still good looking. And her husband was there, nice guy. But it was like really interesting, but from Bicevia.
How about that?
So we got more connections there.
More connections, 6 degrees of separation, I think they say. It's amazing. Yeah.
You probably dated her, so that's all right.
No, I actually didn't, but I know exactly what
meant. But she had a brother, and she used to rate, they used to, horses, they had some horses.
Yeah, she had more than one brother. Her younger brother was in my class.
Wow. Devin Collins. I think she moved out of California. I don't know where she moved. Just recently. But she's a great gal.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting that a lot of people get into bodybuilding for different reasons. Yeah. They were either fat. Well, I can't say that. Okay. They were either,
Yeah, you can.
Chunky. So they were either fat or they were scrawny.
Yeah.
Or they got picked on or the girls didn't look at them. And there's a lot of different ways because I remember in high school, I mean, again, I was like, I was always funny and stuff, but I had like, curly Italian hair and rock and roll fringe coats. No one wore shit in those days. So I wasn't like girls weren't chasing me down the hall. Let's put it that way. That didn't happen until after Staying Alive. That's another story. But it was great. And then when I started getting into boxing when I was real young, I really liked that because there was something, if you're like a skinny guy and get picked on a little bit, there's something very machismo about that in boxing. Yeah. Boxers had really good builds and stuff. And there's something about the camaraderie in the gym. I lived in New Jersey then. I was like the only white guy in my gym. I was the only white guy in my neighborhood. I got along great with everybody. It was great, man. We just go in the gym and bust balls and have fun.
Yeah.
And it really was good for my psyche because I grew up, I was a little timid in some ways, but to sit there and get those aggressions out, like hitting the bag and stuff, it was great for me. It was almost like Primal Scream from Arthur Janov, like banging stuff, thinking about someone you didn't like, which was a nice idea. Now it's my agents.
Yeah, but the thought of, being able to, I mean, I'm sure it gave you some confidence that,
It gives you a little confidence.
I can handle myself. Shit goes down. I can handle myself.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, at least I have a chance.
Well, I just have a chance, you know, a fighting chance.
Yeah, a fighter's chance.
But, you know, yeah, but it was really interesting with that stuff. And but I think that's what it is. And I think there's no excuse. I've been hammered. You know, people go, man, you know, now everyone makes an excuse for being out of shape or this and that. I said, you know what? It's your body. It's your temple. I mean, that's why when you see guys, when they get older, they fall apart.
Yep.
Yeah. Do I have some joints and issues? But now I'm training with my brother calls me up. You know, he's always finding something new. First it was Pilates. Kick my ass at Pilates. So now it's Uberson, those bands.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me tell you something, man. That will kick your ass from here to Monday. Some of those bands.
Yeah.
Try to curl them. It's like.
Yeah. Well, and you have the tension both ways.
Yeah, and I get a better pump, believe it or not. Some people do. And so it comes like with five bands. It's called Uberson. They're orange. And he's really, and you look at the guy, he's a great, he's ripped. He's in good shape, man. Yeah. You know, I don't know if he has any helpers. I don't know. But I'm just saying, but some of those exercises, I mean, in 25 minutes, you can really get it going. I mean, that thing hooks to the door, you're doing like tries,
yeah.
And
yeah.
You can do everything. But the thing is, the tension never goes away.
Right.
And you get pumped, man.
Oh, yeah. Let me ask you, you were also a consultant in movies for boxers, weren't you?
Yes, the TV series, The Contender. Yes, I was.
Contender. Okay, so in your boxing, did you ever actually box in any fights or?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I competed.
Okay. Because
I competed in the amateurs, not in the pros.
Okay. And so, and then you obviously, the Contender, was that people that were getting ready for a movie? I remember the show, The Contender.
No, it was a contest of fighters, kind of, you know, reality show, and the winner would get $1 million.
Okay.
But these guys are most of them poor kids. $1 million. Well, I'll take $1 million to take a beating for that.
Yeah, sure.
Matter of fact.
Yeah.
So for to get beat up for $1 million, I'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take the job.
How about Lee? Would you take a beat for $1 million, Lee? No.
I guess not. Silently.
I guess not. No. For $1 million, I get knocked out. I'll
you
take it.
You think you would, Lee? You think you would? Really? I would.
Yeah. Listen, Lee, if you went in with one of these guys. Lee, if you went in, I can guarantee it'd be very quick and painless. Like
what
the
do
first
you feel it?
Pop! You know,
what do you feel it? Go to sleep.
You feel it. No, but so there's things, and I think some people go to extremes. Like Corey Everson's a good friend of mine, but she was fantastic because she was tall. And this is the great one. And Rachel McLeish, I know them both, you know, very well. Now, here's the funny thing. I went out with Rachel a few times. This is early 80s before she was married or anything like this. She wasn't going with anybody at the time. And she was really a nice person. So another girl that kind of liked me, all of a sudden, now you've heard this before. I would never want to look like that. I said, well, here's some news. You never will.
I've used that line.
Yeah, it's called genetics. That's why she's Miss Olympia twice, okay? And you're Miss Floppy Disk or whatever.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, I love that one. I would want to look like that. Never will, trust me.
Yeah.
First of all, it's a lot of work. You know, it's amazing when you think about bodybuilding. I mean, you're going on stage in a Speedo.
Yeah.
So they're looking at it. It's not like you're just torso. You're wearing like balloon pants.
Right.
I mean, you know, they're looking at every part from your butt to your calves to your ankles.
Yeah,
so it's and that's why guys get mental, like Mike Christian. That's why they just pop their cork at one day because the pressure.
Yeah.
Because they go, well, you can't take it personal. I go, of course you take it personal. You're wearing a pair of like a jock strap in front of people on stage. And they go, you know, his pecs are good. Nah, his ass and calves are no good.
Yeah.
So,
exit right.
Exit stage right. Yeah. So. But the thing, I think the thing Arnold had was that he was very confident in himself.
Yeah.
And he had, you know, we have the same birthday, July 30th, Arnold and I. Yeah. So, but he had that confidence in himself, you know, and I think that's what it was. I mean, when you see my documentary, I had a different kind of confidence in myself because I didn't really have anywhere else to go. I wasn't a great student. You know, I wasn't, well, if music fails, I can always go back to MIT and get my master's.
Yeah.
I end up working at your father's dairy farm.
Exactly. You
know, mucking stalls like cow pies. That's where I would have been. So, and I think that's what my documentary shows, is that a persistence, a belief in self, and, you know, sometimes a belief in a higher being, all that stuff kind of coincides with each other for you to stay in the game. I'm sure when you've competed, you go, man, I should have done more calves.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's not easy. I mean, no. So, I mean, when I go on stage, okay, I'm saying, okay, I'm going on stage and I'm going to try to get however the crowd is to really dig me after 90 minutes and get a standing ovation or an encore.
Yeah.
From scratch.
Yeah.
So I don't know these people, never seen them. And people think it's easy. I said, well, try it. There, go outside and try it. Yeah. Here's a guitar, go on stage and entertain people for 90 minutes or 2 hours.
Yeah.
So, but there's a gift involved in that. And not everyone can do it. Not everyone can play basketball like Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant.
Exactly.
Or fight like Ali. Everyone has their thing.
Yeah, that's right.
And you've seen, I'm sure, in your day. I mean, I thought Lou, when he did his comeback, got kind of hosed, like 13th place. He was 307 pounds.
Yeah.
He's huge. He looked good. You know, but I think Lou was, I got to say, of all the bodybuilders I've known, Lou is the one that stayed in the best shape. You know, some of them don't age that well. You know that. Yeah. Son and whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But he aged pretty good.
Yeah. You know, does he still live in the coast of Central California?
Yeah, he moved to, I think it was like Paso Robles or something like out there.
Yeah, yeah. Somewhere on
the coast. Yeah, he and Carla moved. Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know what, look, he bought that house in Santa Monica for nothing.
Yeah.
And he probably sold it for 10 times what he paid for it or more.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's done. They didn't like it anymore.
Speaking of Arnold's confidence, I'm sure you saw the part in the movie. I don't know if it was which one did he did the movie, Arnold. He did two of them. Arnold.
Stay Hungry.
Pumping one of those. But the scene was Arnold.
He's psyching Lou out.
Yeah. You remember that? He goes, Arnold, can you imagine how I feel? This is like a day or two before the show, the Olympia.
He psyched him out.
Yeah, can you imagine how I feel, Lou? I called my mom today. And he said, I told her I just won my 7th Olympia, or whichever one it was. Can you imagine how I feel, Lou? I mean, he did shit like that. He was a prankster, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. What gets in your head.
Yeah.
So here we go. Now, here's Arnold's thing. And he tells me, he goes, Frank, don't lift heavy. Don't. Just stay strict. And, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm in there. I said, yeah, as we go. I said, man, dude. I said, my quads aren't looking like they used to. They don't look that good, man. I'm like, he goes, don't wear shorts. I said, okay. That was his answer. Not do more leg extensions. Don't wear shorts.
Oh, that's him for sure. And then there was another guy that he was giving some information, a tip. He says, when you go on stage, the way he talked, I can't do it.
Yeah.
But he says, when you hit the big poses, you growl really loud. When you hit the other ones, you make it smaller. Oh, God, that's so funny.
And they believed him.
Oh, yeah, they believed him, of course.
No, but he had charisma. I mean, you know, you got to give the guy credit. Came here, couldn't speak the language, had no money, was working construction, became Mr. Olympia 7 times. He made bodybuilding.
Yes, basically. He did. Yes, he did.
And then he becomes a huge movie star. And he still can't speak English that well. And then he becomes the governor. I mean, that's pretty amazing for a guy that didn't get out of high school.
I would say so. And then some.
Yeah. You know? But he had that, again, we talked about that stuff, you know, and he was so gracious to do the movie. Now, I've known him a long time, but he was very gracious, you know. I think he did it because Sly did it, too. Sly did it. They got this competition.
You're right. Of course.
But the thing is, and he has said this, he's got wisdom. He said, you know, if you're afraid to fail, you'll never make it. You never. Because you'll never take the shot.
You'll never
go for it.
Yeah.
You'll just stay complacent. Yeah, okay, my life is good enough.
Yeah.
You'll never go for that thing.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting. And he's right in saying that.
I totally agree with that completely.
Yeah. And I think that was his theory. Now, Franco, I love. Franco was my chiropractor. And he was so much different. I did a movie with Franco in Sardinia. Now, Franco couldn't act his way out of a wet paper bag if he tried. You know, first of all, he couldn't speak English either.
Yeah.
And he had no thespian chops at all.
Yeah.
So I remember we're in Sardinia, and he has got some good actors on the movie, you know, surrounding himself. I'm not saying that I'm the greatest actor, but, you know, I've held my own. So he's there like this, and so he's coming out, you know, without his shirt on. And he's older now. He just, like, shaved his body, but he, like, missed some spots on there. All right, you know, hey, chia pet, here we go. So we're out there, and we're doing it, and, you know, all these good actors are sitting there doing like this. They go, and the director, okay, let's turn it around. He goes, nah, that's good enough. So there's no reverse shots. So it's just him, right?
Yeah.
So no reverse actor. So then I came down, the director goes, that's great, Frank. Okay, let's set up for a reverse. And Frank will go, nah, that's good enough. That's him as the career. So I come on the set one day, and I said, where's Franco? He goes, Franco's writing. I said, writing? I don't think Franco can write. What do you mean, writing what? Oh, he's writing a new scene. I swear to God, Franco's writing a new scene. Now, if it was Oliver Stone, I get it. He's writing a new scene, but it's Franco Colombo, right? Yeah. God rest his soul. And I say this in loving, because I loved him to great, but he was a character.
Yeah.
So they said, okay, we're ready for camera. So I'm saying, wow, I wonder what this new scene is. I swear, may God strike me that. You know what the new scene was?
But
he has no shirt on. He picked a girl up over his head and threw her in the ocean off a rock.
Cut.
That's what that cut. But he got a reverse on it. I didn't. So,
oh my God.
So it was like the craziest thing with this guy. But you had to love him. Because you know what? With him, he never sweat anything. I go, what do you think? He was different. He was not stressed out. He was a great guy. And to me, you know, he was really strong.
Yeah, like a cool criminal, huh?
A cool criminal. Yeah, when you're 5'4" and you can deadlift almost 800 pounds, it's pretty good.
I think he did some strongman competitions. He did. Too. A refrigerator on his back?
That's how his leg, he blew his knee out, running with a refrigerator.
I remember when that happened, yeah. Hey, did he drown?
Yeah, he had a heart attack, though.
Oh, he did? I wonder what happened to him.
Well, because Arnold told him not to go to Sardinia because he had some heart problems, maybe get checked out. And he didn't listen. You know, he was Franco, you know.
Yeah, how old the guy was?
He's 74.
Yeah.
Five. But I was at the memorial. I mean, Arnold was really shaken. That was his best friend ever.
Yeah.
He was very, very shaken.
They did construction together, didn't they?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, they've known each other forever.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny, life's, the longer you're on this planet, you lessons learned. I mean, with my documentary, what I hope people will leave it with, leave the whatever, they're watching it, with something.
Yeah.
Like perseverance, belief in self, loyalty to friends. You know, we're doing all these interviews and stuff like that. You know, there's some people that flake out on us and stuff like that. I never do that. I just don't do it. It's just not part of mine. If I say I'm going to do it, I'll do it.
Yeah.
I only have to come downstairs.
Yeah. Yeah, let me ask you this. You've talked a little bit about your documentary. Can you say a little bit more about what it actually is? I know you're explaining what you hope people will get out of it, but can you give us a little more?
Well, yeah. I mean, what it comes down to with anything in life, you have to have a goal. What is the end game on this situation?
Yeah.
My end game always was music, rock and roll, bump, successful, but never wasn't like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make this amount of money. I'm going to do something. It wasn't that. Of course, everyone wanted to make a little money. Everyone wants to like a leisurely life, the more than you had in the beginning. And And when you see the documentary, Arnold, Sly, I mean, there's 30 people, different people in the documentary. Richie Sambora from Guns N' Roses, John Oates from Hall & Oates. And so a lot of people have known me a long time. And what they talk about is like my persistence. I mean, I've been under the gun. I've been hammered a lot, you know, by the press and stuff. But you have to believe in yourself. And I know it sounds like a mantra everyone has said, but if you don't really, when no one's looking, if you really don't believe yourself, you can't go any further. You can't.
Done. Yep. Done. I agree.
You can't, because you really don't. That's why a lot of people in our business become drug addicts.
Yeah.
Because they don't really think they're that good. And maybe they are lucky and maybe they aren't that good. Yeah. Maybe they just got there. I mean, if I listen to some music, I mean, they're really lucky. So yeah. In other words, you sit back and you say to yourself, God, I really am not that good. And I'm richer, more successful than these people that are 8,000 times better than me. Yeah. And they're humble and they don't have anything. So if you have to believe in yourself, you have to, and I did at an early age. I said, well, this is what I'm going to do. This could be my goal. This is where I'm going.
Yep.
Now, it's the most unforgiving, hardest business in the world. Yep. Show business.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I tell people all the time, mentors. And I said, you know, don't quit your day job. That's my thing. Because chances are of you working are probably slim and none.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are people out here that are extremely talented. And they don't have that nothing.
Yeah. Brutal, but it's the truth and that's reality.
It's immensely brutal.
Yeah.
Business. And so, you know, so when I say mentoring, I'm saying, you know, in a way I'm doing you a favor. I'm saving you a lot of heartache and time. Because if you're not used to getting put down and overlooked and stuff, you're in the wrong business.
Yep, exactly.
Because 98% of it is going to be that.
Yeah. I have to tell you a really quick, at one time, you know, I wanted to do a movie, you know, and I used to train Kevin Costner.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I trained him before he did Dances with Wolves because I was doing personal training back then.
Yeah.
While I was writing my training courses. And so he calls me up. This is later on. He calls me up in my gym that I had and he said, hey, would you like to do this movie with me? Bodyguard. He says, you're going to play the role of, I think his name was Frank. And I said, yeah, man, I can do this. So I had like some lines. I had probably Frank, maybe 20 words. Mm-hmm. That was it. I had these suckers memorized nails. So I go down there to where they're doing the interview. And of course, there's a bunch of people there.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. So I said, oh shit, my butthole puckered right about then. And then I go in there. And then the producer, somebody comes in and said, you study your lines? Oh, yeah. They came in, ready, action. I choked like a big dog. I couldn't even do it my second try. And I said, you know something? Because we talked about this early on. It's you're just reading lines, but it's hard as hell to do that to make it look like you're not.
Let's take a quick pause to tell you about something you're definitely going to want.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're gonna get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief in the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
Well, you know, there's something that we always used to talk about. Like, if you would go to cold reading classes, they'd say, no matter what, always have your script in your hand. Because, you know, you've been practicing all week in front of your girlfriend and your friends. Yeah, but that's not the same as going into an office with a bunch of people that have been just watching bad actors all day and they want to go home. Okay? So now you're walking into somewhat of a hostile environment.
Yeah.
And I used to walk into always a hostile environment because I'm Frank Stallone, my brother Sylvester.
Yeah.
So automatically they had it like, who's this guy going to come in with camouflage on or this?
Yeah.
So, and so I walked into a lot of hostile environments, and I'm a pretty easy, friendly person, but man, they just had it into you. I used to tell all these girls, I said, I'm telling you, put your clothes on. Don't go dressed like a bimbo with the mini skirt and stuff, because you are going to be sitting there with certain casting agents that actually hate girls like you.
Yeah. Because
they were maybe not in shape, maybe got picked on in school because they weren't attractive. And here you come walking in like body perfect, automatic hatred. So it would have been like if I walked in, and I would always try to dress down. I never, not that I was that, you know, muscular, but I would kind of dress down a little bit. But I'd see these guys come in, man, like sleeveless, you know. Yeah. When I tell you, juiced, they're purple. You know? So anyone out there knows what we're talking about.
Yeah.
When you're purple, you've done too much, a little too much D-ball. Yeah.
You're almost blue.
Yeah, you're almost blue. Yeah, and you got zits on your back and all that stuff like that. So these guys would come in, and immediately you put the other guys on, this is probably the guy picked on me in school or took my girlfriend. I said, you're done, man. I said, just go in and be humble. Be nice, be humble, you know, just that.
Authentic if you can.
Yeah.
You know?
But I mean, if you come in, you know, and you have like 19-inch guns and you're shredded and you're wearing like a tank top, a white beater.
Yeah.
That, and you're going for a film like Shakespeare. I don't think it's going to work, you know.
Yeah,
the look is not there.
Yeah, exactly.
So and my brother always gave, he was pretty good advice on stuff, even though he was a little over the top in his day, but he always gave pretty good advice. He goes, let them like you, not hate you.
Yeah. That's a good start.
Let them like you and say, wow, you know, he's a lot different than I thought he was going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what my documentary is about. Everyone has a preconceived idea of who I am, and they don't even know me. They never know. And then all of a sudden, to come to the show, to go, wow, good show. I didn't know we could. I said, what do you think I did?
Yeah.
I mean, you think I walked around going, hey, how you do? I mean, is that what you thought I did?
Yes.
I mean, I've been doing this for 55 years. I mean, you think I could make a life of that?
You know, I've always said, Frank, that the mark of a good program or a guy that's been in an industry forever, like you have, you've done a lot right. You've evolved. You've adapted. And there's a reason why you're still hanging around.
Yeah, there are a lot of friends that I know and that I've known. I'd say the majority of the people I started out with in music, I would say 98% or more quit years ago.
Yeah.
Because they were like, oh, well, you see in my documentary. Well, you know, we were just in it to meet girls, have fun. Frank was in it to win it. Frank was in it this is what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And that is what I wanted to do. These other guys were going, hey, man, maybe pick up some chicks.
But, right.
You know, of course, their parents are going to make them go to college.
Yeah.
You know, my parents never had that problem because I was a terrible student, so I wasn't getting into college. So,
what's the name of your documentary?
It's called Stallone Frank, that is.
Okay.
And it's on Amazon Prime. It's on Google Play. It's on... Amazon Prime, Google Play, and iTunes for now, but it's going to go public pretty soon, and it's going to be surprising to people. I think people are really going to enjoy it.
Nice. We're going to go ahead and wrap this up, and I want to again say to you, I really appreciate you coming on, and the stories you've told have just been amazing, and I'm shocked as hell how close we've been to each other and never met.
Are you in Visalia now?
Yeah. No, I'm in a little town called Exeter, but it's like 10 miles away from Visalia. Uh-oh.
And, so the spirit of Devin Collins lives on.
Right on. And I have to tell you, I'll get my ass kicked, or she'll try. My wife, she's from Holland, and she's a tough one. And when I told her that Frank Stallone was coming on, she says, you tell Frank that the next time he's down in this area to stop by our gym and to be our guest. And wait, it gets, there's more. She said, and then, because she's a legit gourmet cook, have him come out to the house and we'll make him a meal that he'll never forget.
Well, tell your wife this. I played the Christmas show in Holland in 1985. And Andre, he's the most famous singer, Andre Hassas or something like that. Oh, sure. He's the most famous singer in Holland's history. Yeah. Was there, and I was the star.
Nice.
In Amsterdam of the 1986 Christmas show.
Nice.
And I must say, the women were pretty good looking.
Yeah, I would say that's a fair statement. For sure.
I would say, like, hey, can I extend this tour for a little bit longer?
Yeah.
One of those things.
Like a year or two.
Yeah, for eternity.
Yeah.
So, but no, it was great. Andre Hassas, ask her; she'll know exactly who he is. He's like the Bruce Springsteen of Holland.
Oh yeah, I'll tell her that. But seriously, if you're ever up this way or down this way, don't hesitate to stop. I'd love to have you as a guest in our gym.
And, got it.
Because I seem to really have connected with you, and I appreciate that.
Thank you very much, and. Have a great, great weekend, man.
Hey, be well. Are you living in Venice?
I live in L.A. No, I don't live in Venice.
Oh, okay. I'm down in L.A. all the time doing stuff.
Not in West L.A. No, I'm not crazy. That crazy.
Yeah, okay.
I live in a somewhat nicer part.
Nice.
I mean, Venice used to be nice, but not anymore.
Yeah. Okay, Frank. Well.
Thank you, Leo.
I appreciate coming on. Hopefully, we run into each other one of these days.
You got it, brother. Thank you very much.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.